This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Monday, March 11th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News, back in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, AutoNation's acquisition strategy becomes clear. Chevy resumes Blazer EV sales and cuts prices, and the founder of the Continental Automotive Dealership Group is arrested for arson. Plus, this week marks the 20th anniversary of the event that sparked the self-driving industry we know today, the DARPA Grand Challenge.
It was the earliest of the early days, and it showed, but an industry was born.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
AutoNation is pivoting toward more mergers and acquisitions as valuations for franchise dealerships decline and sellers reset expectations. That's according to a note by JP Morgan's Rajat Gupta, who offered a few clues as to AutoNation's strategy based on a recent meeting with CEO Mike Manley and others. At the same time, Gupta says AutoNation will slow the pace of expansion for its AutoNation USA standalone used vehicle stores over the coming months because of supply challenges. Automotive News was not able to reach either Gupta or AutoNation for comment. You can read more about AutoNation's strategy at autonews.com.
General Motors is resuming sales of the 2024 Chevrolet Blazer EV. GM sidelined the model more than 2 months ago to fix a software quality problem. The automaker also cut the midsize electric crossover's price by at least 9%, pushing all three available versions below $50,000. That's after shipping and a $7,500 federal tax credit. GM made a sourcing change on some ineligible parts, so the Blazer EV is again eligible for the full credit. The least expensive configuration available now starts at about $50,000 with shipping, but before the tax credit, down from about $57,000.
The state of Illinois is negotiating an incentive deal with Rivian related to its decision to produce a new model in the state. Rivian made a surprise announcement Thursday that its new SUV, the R2, would be manufactured at its normal Illinois plant. It says it's pausing construction of a factory near Atlanta. Illinois has the chance to double down on Rivian, which already has created more than 8,000 jobs at a former Mitsubishi plant about 125 miles south of Chicago. The state says it's still finalizing elements of the incentive package.
And Continental Automotive Group founder Brian Hardeman was arrested last month in Austin, Texas, on charges of burglary of a building and felony arson. The 75-year-old former auto dealer was arrested February 29th and posted bond. He is to appear in Travis County District Court on March 21st. Hardeman's lawyer, Sam Bassett, tells us at Automotive News that, quote, "We are working on our own investigation of the case and circumstances." The Austin Fire Department responded to a fire alarm at a former bike shop in downtown Austin on February 25th. The affidavit for Hardeman's arrest said that he had inquired about purchasing the bike shop property adjacent to property he owns. A fire official said, although the case is ongoing, investigators were able to identify the man as Hardeman as well as the SUV at the scene. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, with the slowdown of the used market, do you think AutoNation's move to pivot to more M&A is risky business?
Yeah, it's an interesting move, especially in light of what we heard recently from Lithia, the largest dealership group in the U.S., saying it's planning to slow down some of its M&A activity because prices have gotten so high. Maybe Lithia saying that is sending a signal to some sellers that they're going to need to get a little more reasonable in what they're asking for, and maybe AutoNation is responding to that. But there, it's a little bit of a tough position, right? It's hard to get supply of used vehicles to grow that business. It's hard to buy new vehicle franchises because those prices are so high. So it is a tough market to grow in. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Interesting stuff. Coming up, the first DARPA Grand Challenge happened 20 years ago this week. We'll take a look back at the event that ignited the self-driving industry. That's next on Daily Drive.
We want to hear your voice on Daily Drive. What would you like us to talk about this week on our Weekend Drive episode of the show? What are some of the biggest industry trends or news stories you're thinking about?
Send us a voicemail, text, or email, and you might hear it on the next edition of Weekend Drive. Here's how you can get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, at autonews.com.
And tune into the show this weekend. You might hear your question or comment.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. 20 years ago this week, the first of three DARPA challenges formed a community that catapulted the dream of self-driving vehicles into the realm of the possible. Our own Jake Neer and Automotive News Tech and Innovation team leader Pete Bigelow take a close look at the impact of the first DARPA Grand Challenge on the latest episode of Shift, a podcast about mobility. We also hear from DARPA's Tony Tether and Anthony Lewandowski of Pronto AI. Here's a piece of their conversation.
So let's start off at the beginning. You know, what was the genesis of the DARPA challenges?
So DARPA, Jake, is the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, founded in the Cold War to kind of take on these big moonshot projects that needed a little push from a research perspective into technological reality to the point where they were ready for industry to take a closer look. About the time of the challenges, maybe a few years before, DARPA's new director, Tony Tether, was concerned about the number of soldiers that were dying in Humvees overseas.
And one young lady, I don't know if you remember this at all, but she got hit. And I said, well, what the hell? Well, why are we having people doing this? These damn things ought to be able to just go by themselves, okay? We had the ability to know where you were, so why couldn't we just have the vehicle get there?
And he didn't want to go to the usual suspects of government contractors to do it. Thus, long story short, he came up with the idea of a $1 million prize, and the sketch of the first Grand Challenge was born.
Okay, so they send out the notification of the challenge. What is the response like?
The response is incredible. In fact, they had more than 400 people show up for a meeting about 13 months prior to the race that was held at the Peterson Automotive Museum in Los Angeles. It all of a sudden kind of brought all these people who'd been hobbyists out of the woodwork. And you know, Tony was mentioning that there's a woman in Kansas who kind of was livid that her husband was spending so much time in the garage tinkering with robots and spending a lot of money.
Oh, you're the guys. My husband is spending all this money.
You know, it really was that kind of that moment of getting people out of their garages who are just having fun. And like all of a sudden there's serious money at play and a serious goal ahead.
We're in the middle of the desert. Who's there? Is it a big gathering?
Yes, you're in the desert outside Barstow, California. And I think a lot of teens brought trailers. They were sleeping outside. They had bonfires. They were just enduring these sleepless nights together out in the desert. And then it wasn't until the morning of the race, I think it was about 4 a.m., that they actually got the exact coordinates of the 142 oh, wow. miles between Barstow and Prim. And they had a couple hours to then fine tune their plans.
We just stick on this road here that's in the foothills.
Right.
Head all the way up.
We got a great, beautiful day in the Mojave Desert here. We're ready to go on our course.
We need our training.
By about 6:30, the sun was coming up. They were right at the Slash X Cafe in Barstow, out in the, you know, just outside Barstow in the Mojave Desert. And that was the starting point for the first DARPA challenge.
And we're 30 seconds from history. Ladies and gentlemen, Sandstorm. Strobes on, audible goes out, and Dad is off and running at the DARPA Grand Challenge. Virginia Tech's Cliff.
Tell me a little bit about some of the people involved. We can start with Anthony Lewandowski. I assume that he was sort of that kind of person that you were just talking about, right? Someone who was a hobbyist that came out of the woodwork at that point?
Yes, he did enjoy kind of experimenting with robotics. On the side, he was primarily at the time studying industrial engineering and operations at University of California.
I think I was a grad student at the time. And my mom had sent me this announcement. And she works at the European Union. So it's weird that she would send it all the way from, you know, Belgium and say, hey, check this out. This is kind of what you're doing. You like robots. And it looks like there's a race going on. You should, you know, should check it out.
Anthony had the gumption, you might say, to be the lone person to bring a motorcycle out to the desert. He thought that was the best way to kind of stay upright on a, you know, rocky, uncertain terrain.
You can clearly go more off-road with a motorcycle than a car or pickup or something like that. And so we were like, okay, let's go with the best way forward. And then even though it's harder to get, you know, driving the first, you know, 100 feet, you know, you'll have a more capable platform when you do get it working.
It's a Yamaha dirt bike or race bike, essentially. And he outfitted it with self-driving systems and sensors. Him and his team, you know, it wasn't just Anthony, it was the entire blue team. And he kind of brought, you know, more of those disparate people together from the University of California. And they worked on this for more than a year, getting this this motorcycle ready to go.
It's almost like landing on the moon, you know, arguably probably even more important, but you could really tell was going to be a big move forward. I mean, we're still trying to figure it out, right? But it's going to be something big. And you knew that from the very beginning, you know, I mean, I felt that way. I mean, maybe other people didn't, but like that to me, that felt like this is the start of something very special. You know, we didn't sleep that night. It was a lot of energy, a lot of stress going on. You know, I think it started like 3 a.m. or something, you know, very early, maybe 4 a.m., getting everything ready and just frantically, you know, putting final touches on, make sure that you have a good performance. Anyway, so you get your vehicles ready and everybody was lined up from based on their start times. And, you know, it took many hours to get going. And so they like got more and more tired, you know, and you know, as you get in the sun, you know, the morning of the desert. And I think as we went there, we got everything all set up and got it ready to go. And the DARPA, you know, official was holding the motorcycle and we launched it and then like drove and you could see that something was wrong. It didn't work. And then it fell over after like 2 feet or something like that. And it was very, very embarrassing.
The wire demonstration and off we go. Good try, guys. Anthony, good effort.
Anthony forgot to switch on a stabilizer that would have kept the bike up in its first few seconds at a very low speed. I think we all know that feeling of getting going on a bike and you're the most vulnerable there. And he had a system in place to protect against that, but he forgot to turn it on. And the bike toppled over after about 2 feet. And there was a lot of discussion about whether he could try again. And the race, you know, I think the race rules were once you got going, that was that. So unfortunately, his first DARPA challenge ended after about 1 second.
And I mean, just thinking about that, the amount of work that you put into something like that, I mean, just sacrificing a lot. I mean, these guys are sacrificing a whole lot of their personal lives to participate in this, and especially right up to it. You know, people talking about not sleeping and all this stuff. And I think Anthony has said that lack of sleep actually may have played a role in that forgetfulness to put on that system. And I mean, it's just heartbreaking thinking about that.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, he's not alone in that sense. A lot of the teams from the first DARPA challenge had things go wrong, and they'd all put in, you know, a year plus of their lives, like you said, sleepless nights, long weekends away from their families, to make this happen. And, you know, dreams died quickly there in the Mojave Desert. Of course, we talk about the hurdles still ahead for self-driving vehicles in terms of we don't have a car that can go anywhere at any time yet. But almost immediately out of DARPA, like Caterpillar is interested, Google's interested, automated farming takes off, automated mining takes off. There's industrial applications. As we talked about, Red is still working on moon rovers, and there's, as we saw last week with the commercial endeavors going to the moon, we have automated electric vehicles on the moon. So self-driving is not this one thing about all of us going anywhere we want to go in our cars, at least not yet. It's about all these dimensions that automated driving technology enables.
So let's talk about where we are now. I mean, the contrast between a bunch of engineers and enthusiasts in the desert to where we are now with everything being commercialized, and the enthusiasm of that initial event compared to the real big questions about safety, commercialization, all these things that are happening right now.
Right. I think, you know, you should quickly find out that it's not just about the technology. And that's been the biggest challenge when it comes to bringing automated vehicles to public roads in a widespread, meaningful way. It's about infrastructure. It's about public perception, regulations, of course, safety, and all those things are at various stages of development. And the technology is still in development too. Like I think one of the biggest fallacies that I hear from time to time is that the technology is fine. It's just a regulation or something else holding this up. And that's clearly not the case. The technology remains in a fledgling state. It's not perfect by any stretch. And I think we've seen the industry kind of fall back from this goal of we're going to save lives in an exponential way. You know, we're going to get from 40,000 deaths on U.S. roads to 40. And now if you look kind of carefully at the statements that come out of companies, they're like, we're going to be better than human drivers. That's a big retreat, I think. It's something that we definitely need to continue watching as self-driving continues to play out.
Our own Pete Bigelow and Jake Neer talked about the 20th anniversary of the first DARPA Grand Challenge on Shift, a podcast about mobility. You can hear more from their conversation, along with more stories from Tony Tether and Anthony Lewandowski, as well as from Waymo's Melanie Dumas-Grimm and Red Whitaker of Carnegie Mellon, on Shift, wherever you get your podcasts. That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News journalists Mark Homer, Lindsay Van Hulley, and Caitlin Luckoff for their reporting for today's podcast. We also had reporting from John Pletz and Greg Hines of our sibling publication, Crane's Chicago Business. You can get the latest news on the self-driving industry, retail mergers and acquisitions, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for a conversation with GM President of Global Markets, Rory Harvey.
With the transition to EVs, with some of the regulations in terms of emissions, etc., it's unknown. You know, we're looking out of the windscreen now, and there's not a path that you can look at in the rearview mirror to be able to say how that is going to play out.
We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think about the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com, or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.